Hello, everyone.
We completed chapter 1 last time. Now we come to chapter 2 of Job and verse 1. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. God allowed this. There was a meeting of the angels before God. There's administrative meetings and there's scheduling and all that kind of thing. And God and Jesus Christ administer the government throughout the universe, and it's done in a decent and orderly fashion. The Bible shows that. And Satan was allowed to come in among them up there in heaven as they presented themselves before God for this unique, special occasion of God dealing with Job and using Satan without Satan even recognizing it to teach Job a lesson that would mean that he would be greater than he ever was before, because now his greatness came from God, not from himself. And so here was another meeting, like the one we've already talked about in chapter 1. To repeat, verse 1, again there was a day when the sons of God, sons meaning angels, remember, there are three ways that sons are used, and you have to get it in context. Sometimes it means angels, sometimes it means physical human beings, and sometimes it means begotten sons who are children who will become literal sons in this family of God as spirit beings after the resurrection. In this case, it's angels. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And Satan is a fallen angel, a great archangel who's become the devil. But he can still travel, if God allows him to, wherever God wants him to travel, in this case, to be at this meeting. Basically, he's confined to this earth by God. And this is where he operates. He's the God of this world. And he travels to and fro and back and forth and up and down on this earth, as we've already read in verse 7 of chapter 1. Verse 2, and the Lord said unto Satan, from whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, he repeats this again, and Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. I'm all over the place. It's my realm. I am the king. Well, he is the God of this world because God allows him to be, and this world is in a mess because Satan is the king of this world, the God of this world. And the Lord said unto Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There's none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and eschews evil, and still he holds fast his integrity, although you move me against him to destroy him without cause, although you tried to get me to destroy him. You wanted me to do things to him that would destroy him. Well, I allowed you to do some things, but it didn't destroy him. No, because he's a great man. He's a great servant of mine. He has tremendous integrity. And he didn't budge on his integrity. And he had tremendous character. And he had a tremendous attitude. But he also had self-righteousness that would corrupt from time to time that attitude and that character. Self-righteousness, depended on himself too much, thought too highly of himself from time to time, instead of thinking highly of God all the time and giving him all the credit. He would take some of the credit to himself because he was such a talented and powerful man. Well, God had to teach him a lesson not to do that. Speaking of Job, he had to teach Job a lesson not to do that. So he said, well, Satan, you struck him with a tremendous blow. And what did he do? He held fast his integrity, and he did not turn against me. He remained faithful. Even though you wanted me to destroy him without cause, I would not do that, but I allowed you to do what you wanted to do up to a point, and you thought that would be the end of Job, but it isn't. He's still there. He's still my servant. He still has his integrity intact. And look at what Satan came back with here. What a foul, rotten attitude. He just kept on wanting to destroy Job utterly and all that he had. That's the way Satan is. Oh, yeah, you think he's such a servant? Here's something I can do, and that'll destroy him. And see, if Satan could destroy Job and his family, that would mean he could do something that would hurt so many people. Because Job was a tremendous man, and yet look how he's been completely destroyed and his family wiped out. So what good does it do to serve God? Job served God, and look what happened to him. See, Satan was wanting to send that message around by destroying Job and all that he had. And of course, he was being rebellious against God. You think so highly of him. And if he could just show God that he was wrong and make God out to be wrong about Job by bringing Job down and then having him turn on God, then Satan in his twisted and rotten and vile way would get great satisfaction out of that. So what he was trying to do was destroy Job and all he had, because he is a destroyer. That's one of his names. He loves to inflict pain and destruction and agony. So he wanted to do that on Job and all that he had. And he wanted to do that to rebel against God and to try to prove God wrong. And so God is using Satan to actually, in the long run, teach Job a tremendous lesson. And then Job will be even a greater servant of his and be even more blessed as he is a greater servant of his than he was up to that point. So God said, well, you had an opportunity to bring Job down and you couldn't do it. His integrity is still there. And then look what Satan said in verse 4. And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yea, all that a man has will he give for his life. But put forth your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he'll curse you to your face. He was trying to get God to do all these terrible things to Job, but God wouldn't do it, but he allowed Satan to do it. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he's in your hand, but save his life. Oh, you think that'll do it? Okay, he's in your hand. You can afflict him and his health and his body, but you can't take his life. He's in your hand, but save his life. Verse 7, can you just imagine how gleeful Satan was now? You can just see him with a leering grin on his face, rubbing his hands together and saying, oh boy, I get to really punish and afflict Job and just make him go through agony. This is going to be so much fun. That's the way Satan is. He loves evil because he is evil through and through. Verse 7, so went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord, and he smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took him took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. And even his family started turning on him. Notice what his wife said, Job's wife. Verse 9, then said his wife unto him, do you still retain your integrity? Are you still going to worship God? Are you still going to maintain your righteous approach to things? Why aren't you giving up? Why in the world would the God you worship be punishing you like this? Curse God and die, she said. But he said unto her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? He said, we receive all these blessings from God. Sometimes there's going to be some problems. There's going to be some calamities that come as well. But that doesn't mean we ought to turn on God. That doesn't mean he's not God. That doesn't mean he doesn't love us. That doesn't mean he won't deliver us. So I'm not going to do what you said. I'm going to thank him for the blessings, and I'm going to endure the trouble that's come upon us. And I'm going to keep obeying him and looking to him and trusting him. And you're just being foolish, he told his wife, and ridiculous. In all this, it says, the last part of verse 10, did not Job sin with his lips? Verse 11. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. For they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. They were his friends, in some cases his relatives, but mainly they were his friends. And they wanted to come and help him out. And they wanted to come and mourn with him and comfort him and be with him. But also, you will see that they had a problem with self-righteousness too as they began to lecture him. Verse 12, Job 2. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept, and they rent everyone his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. He was in such terrible shape they didn't even recognize him. Didn't even recognize him. Can you imagine Job just being from head to toe filled with agony and pain and then covered with boils and open sores and running wounds in his skin and on his body and just sitting there in pain and agony, unrecognizable? He was so sick and so afflicted. And they had to come on up and get closer and realize it really is him. And so they were shocked, as it shows in verse 12. Now notice verse 13. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spoke a word unto him, for they saw that his grief was very great. They just sat there in shock. Why has this happened? What's going on? Where in the world did this come from? What did you do? We thought everything was just going along great. Job thought everything was going along great. And now this, from out of nowhere. What's happened? So they were just stunned and sat there in stunned silence. Now, just consider this. Job has lost a tremendous amount of his wealth. He's lost a tremendous amount of his workforce. And he lost his children, his family. At least he lost a big part of his family. And what does he have left? He's covered from head to toe in sores and wounds. And he's in unimaginable pain. Well, it shocked him, but it shocked those that were close to him, too. They couldn't even speak for a while. They were in such shock. And they saw that his grief was very great, it says in verse 13. Now let's notice chapter 3. After this opened Job his mouth and cursed his day. And Job spoke and said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man child conceived. I wish I'd never been born if it was going to turn out like this. Terrible. I'd be better off to be dead and just never even been born in the first place. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it or claim it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. He's bemoaning being born because this has turned out so horrible for him. It would have been better, as he is in such agony, and in some cases not even thinking straight, saying, well, I'd have been better off never to be born if my life's going to turn out like this. This is horrible. And that's what he's saying here. Verse 7, lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. Verse 8, let them curse it that curse the day who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from my eyes. Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? If I could have only died early in my life, maybe even at birth, or soon after, or not be born at all. I mean, this is a man in agony crying out to his friends about a horrible catastrophe that's hit him, and he's bemoaning the day that he was even born because of what it's ended up being. Why did the knee prevent me, or why the breast that I should suck or should nurse? Why did the knees prevent me or receive me? In other words, at birth. For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept. Then had I been at rest, I would be in the grave. I would be at peace. I would know nothing. I wouldn't be going through all of this suffering and agony. With kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, and they are in their graves. And he could have been there too. Or with princes that had gold, who filled their houses with silver. Or as an hidden untimely birth, I had not been, as infants which never saw light. In other words, why was I not hidden like a stillborn child, is what he's saying here. There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. Your trouble is over. You're in the grave. It's better than this, is what Job was saying. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from the master, because they're dead and they're in the grave. That's where I want to be. That's where I should be. I'd rather be there than here, is what he's saying. Wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter soul? Why am I here, and I can see the sun rise and the sun set, and I can see things, and I can hear things, and I'm alive, but what kind of life is this? Job is saying. which long for death, but it comes not, and dig for it more than for hid treasure. If you're in a bitter state that I'm in, you long for death rather than be in this condition. Job is telling his three friends, which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Why is life given to a man whose way is hid and whom God has hedged in? And he knew God had protected him, but now what's happened to that protection? For my sighing comes before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. How am I going to eat, and how can I do anything? When am I going to be able to rest? This is a miserable situation I'm in, as he pours out his soul to his friends. Verse 25, for the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is coming to me. The most horrible thing you can imagine has hit me out of nowhere, and I don't know why. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came. So he's saying there in verse 26 that right out of nowhere, this trouble has come. I was living a life of quiet. I was living a life of prosperity. I was living a life of safety. I thought this would go on and on and on. And yet it turns out I really wasn't in safety. I really wasn't going to be able to rest. I really wasn't going to be able to live a quiet life because trouble has now come and disrupted all of that and completely changed everything. Now we come to chapter 4 of Job. One of his friends speaks up and probably tries to comfort him, but starts to go a little too far and get into things that he had no business of getting into in terms of his observations. Chapter 4, verse 1. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, if we assay or attempt to commune with you, will you be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Now, if we start talking, Job, are you going to get offended or is it going to hurt your feelings? I hope not, because we're going to have to do it anyway. Verse 3, behold, you have instructed many, and you have strengthened the weak hands. Your words have upholden him that was fallen, and you have strengthened the feeble knees. You have helped so many people. You have been so correct, so right. You have been so outstanding in your life and in the way you've helped others and in the way you've taught others. But now it's come upon you. When you were helping other people who had big problems and you didn't, you were doing such good things. But now those big problems have come on you, Eliphaz is saying. Now you're experiencing what you helped others get through, but you have never experienced before. Now you're experiencing what they experienced, the trouble and the catastrophe and the cataclysmic things that sometimes life will bring upon a person. But now it's come upon you and you faint. It touches you and you are troubled. Now he starts getting a little self-righteous. What's your problem, Job? If he's sitting there and he's looking at Job and he's just one big, horrible, physical wreck, while he's feeling okay, Eliphaz, he can get a little self-righteous here, it seems. What's your problem, Job? You were so good before, why aren't you still good? But now it has come upon you and you faint. It touches you and you are troubled. Verse 6, is not this your fear, your confidence, your hope, and the uprightness of your ways? What happened to that? What happened to your fear of God? What happened to your integrity? Isn't that what should be there now? Shouldn't you be having that and using that now? Well, Job was. And you're going to see now that Eliphaz starts saying some things about God that he shouldn't say. And at the end of the book, God says, you better have Job pray for you or it's over. So you got to be careful when you read what Job's three friends say, because sometimes they'll say something that's okay, and then they get into things that are not okay. And especially when they're talking about God, but even about Job, they weren't always right. So he says, verse 7, remember, I pray you, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? If you're so innocent and if you're so righteous, how come you're going through this, Job? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. Anytime I see somebody going through what you're going through, Job, there is something you've done to cause this. Where there's smoke, there's fire. By the blessed of God, you perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are you consumed. That's not true. But that's what he said. And he got in trouble with God for saying that. It was Satan that afflicted Job, not God. Eliphaz spoke out of turn here. The roaring of the lion and the voice of the fierce lion and the teeth of the young lions are broken. The old lion perishes for lack of prey, and the stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. Now a thing was secretly brought to me, and mine ear received a little thereof. In thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falls on men, fear came upon me and trembling, which made all my bones to shake. I began to realize something. I got a little message here, and I'm going to pass it on to you, Job. You better listen to me. You're off track, and you're acting in a way that's unacceptable. Eliphaz is confronting Job with this while he's sitting there or lying there in agony. Apparently, this was Eliphaz having a dream, and he had thoughts in that dream that were wrong. It says here, verse 13, in thoughts from the visions of the night when deep sleep fall on men, so here he's talking about that happening to him, fear came upon me and trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Verse 15, then a spirit passed before my face, the hair of my flesh stood up. Well, that wasn't one of God's spirits. That wasn't an angel. Undoubtedly, that was a demon that he was dreaming about here. It stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. An image was before my eyes. There was silence, and I heard a voice saying, shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker? So Eliphaz had a dream, and he dreamed things that were not proper and right before God. And even in that dream, he got a message from a voice in that dream. And that voice was not from God or one of his angels, but it was from a demon. It says, shall a mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker? Behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels he charged with folly. Well, demons and fallen angels, that's who he charged with error and with folly. Notice what it says in Job 4:17 and 18 from the Revised Standard Version, which clarifies the real meaning of these two verses. It says here in verse 17, can a mortal man be righteous before God? Can a man be pure before his Maker? As if, no, he can't. But in fact, you can when you repent, when you yield to God, and God then develops righteousness and purity in you through the power of his Holy Spirit. He goes on to say in verse 18, even in his servants he puts no trust. Well, he does trust his servants who are yielded to him and guided by him. He trusts them to obey him because of their track record. And his angels he charges with error. There were one-third of the angels that rebelled along with Lucifer, and he became Satan, and the angels that rebelled became demons. And so, yes, they became fallen angels. But you can see how some of Job's friends, in lecturing him and correcting him, they just simply didn't get it right quite often when they began talking about God. And we'll see that that's what God says in the last part of the book of Job. How much less in them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth. They are destroyed from morning to evening. They perish forever without any regarding it. Doth not their excellence, which is in them, go away? They die even without wisdom. So this man Eliphaz is going off track here and trying to correct Job and lecture him on how bad he is. And if he weren't so bad, why would this be happening to him? And I got this message late at night, and I'm passing that message on to you. And that message, as you read it here, is not the kind of message that he would receive from God or one of God's angels. But it's an accusing message. And it is a message that is not accurate in some of the content that he says and that he mentions to Job. And Job had to sit there and listen to it. That brings us to the end of chapter 4. Until next time, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.